Oh, wow. The Great Thad, short for Thaddeus Jones, with Steamin'. This was recorded in 1957 for Jones's LP album back in those days. It was titled After Hours. The youngest of the famous Jones brothers, including Hank and Elvin, they were older. Thad Jones was a composer, arranger, and band leader, and a specialist, a master actually, on trumpet, cornet, and flugelhorn. He died in Copenhagen, Denmark, on August the 20th, 1986. He was 63. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's Free Your Mind Friday. Really, it is. That means we're expecting a torrent of all kinds of opinions, and that's what they should be. Your opinion about an issue or event about which you have something specific to say. It doesn't matter whether people agree with you or they don't agree with you. You have a point of view about something, share it. And, you know, you would be able to discern, because the reaction should come in pretty fast, whether you have people agreeing with you or not agreeing with you, but it's not important. What is important is that you learn more and more how to utilize public access to the airwaves to express your point of view and to influence people's thinking. I have no shame in saying that. Everybody wants to influence somebody's thinking. That's the whole point of the advertising industry, to advertise their products and services and to convince you you can't live without them. So we should be very keen on using these opportunities to share our point of view. And again, you can defend yourself if somebody chooses to disagree with you, but understand the word I'm using here. It's called disagreeing, not disrespecting, you know, not putting people down for what they express as a belief, but to appreciate the point of view that they present for what it is, and then go away, have an apple, do something to calm yourself down. But if we get into this business of you upset because you disagree with the person's point of view, that's not very mature, and it's not very responsible. People should feel free to express themselves. They should also anticipate reaction, but we should be respectful at all times, even when, and perhaps especially if, we disagree. So that's the point of Free Your Mind Friday. You choose your own topic and you go at it. Keep in mind, you are not having a program within a program. There's a time limit, and you should sense when you have made your point and cut it off and move on. Give somebody another chance to say something. All right? So dem's the rules, as they say in Brooklyn. Dem's the rules. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. We have a full lineup already. Harvey from Berkeley, where were you? We sent out people looking for you last week.
Well, here I am, delightfully magnificent, Eutrice.
I'm glad to hear your voice. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and I just want to say there is no test. You are the best, and we love you very much.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Thank you so much. Same here. Yeah. This is a mutual admiration society that we have, and we call it a program. It's really a mutual admiration society. All right. What are you freeing your mind of today?
Well, today I'd like to share a renewable energy idea with you and your vast audience that I call solar siding. And aluminum home and building siding became very popular back in the 1950s as a way to protect your home from the elements. And skip to the present, there's a company called Exeger, E-X-E-G-E-R, that manufactures flexible thin film solar cells called Powerfoil, and that's spelled P-O-W-E-R-F-O-Y-L-E, Powerfoil. And my idea is to laminate Powerfoil onto the surface of aluminum and or steel siding to create Powerfoil solar siding that not only protects your home or building against the elements, but also generates clean, renewable electricity. And it turns out that Powerfoil comes in a variety of colors and can produce electricity from both direct and indirect sunlight. So as the sun rises in the morning, your home's solar siding is turning early morning sunlight into electricity. And as the sun climbs in the sky, your rooftop solar panels and solar shingle installation continues to generate clean, renewable power. And then finally, as the sun sets in the west, your solar siding is once again producing electricity until dusk. All of the solar electricity generated from both the home's solar siding as well as your rooftop solar installation can be used on the spot or stored in a home battery for nighttime use, as well as recharging your electric car, truck, or bicycle. And in other words, your home will be producing electricity from sunrise to sunset. And the wonderful part is that once manufactured and installed, solar panels and solar siding use no water over their warranted lifetime except for an occasional cleaning. They also have no moving parts, make no noise, require minimum maintenance, and don't create any greenhouse gas emissions. And I'd like to, and I say that it's time to get star powered. It's time for solar siding, and thank you for letting me say it, Utrice.
Thank you for contributing today, and welcome back.
Thank you.
Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family. I hope all is
well. Thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
You know, Utrice, when we first started the discussion about this injection, you might remember that I said from the very beginning that it did not meet the legal or medical definition of a vaccine, because a vaccine was something that produced immunity in the body that protected you from the disease. And I couldn't figure out how that definition that has been in effect for decades would be consistent with what was being done today. So I went back and actually found something interesting that I would just like to share. So if you go back to the CDC website, like as far back as maybe 2010, 2011, and you might not be able to find it anymore because it's probably not even being archived, it's probably been removed. The definition of a vaccine was a product that produces immunity, therefore protecting the body from disease. And that's as far back as 2010. By July of 2015, the definition had changed. Instead of being a product that produces immunity, protecting the body from disease, it was now a product that stimulates a person's immune system to a specific disease, protecting the person from that disease. So it changed from a product that produces immunity to a product that stimulates a person's immune system. Well, they left that in place until this year. So around August, the middle of August, it changed again. So the definition of vaccine was a product that stimulates a person's immune system to produce an immunity to a specific disease. And then less than a week later, after the FDA gave final, you know, Pfizer final approval for the mRNA jab, the definition changed on September 1st, a month ago. So it's no longer a product. It is now a preparation that stimulates the body's immune response against disease. So in the latest definition of a vaccine, it's no longer a product. It's now a preparation. It no longer stimulates the immune response, but stimulates the system, It doesn't produce immunity, and it stimulates an immune response against disease, not against a specific disease. So it no longer protects a person from the disease. So all of these changes have to be consistent with the narrative that this jab provides immunity, that it protects you, that you cannot transmit this infection once you become infected. This is just so sinister. And the public really is not the wiser. I mean, I really had to go search for this and compare the different changes over time. This is sinister.
What accounts for these various changes, you think?
Well, I think the public was beginning to recognize that, in fact, this was not a vaccine in the traditional sense of the definition of vaccine, but it was something different. And so the changes had to be consistent with the narrative that they were promoting because it was inconsistent.
So how does the health department and the government explain this metamorphosis in what it is insisting is a national campaign to safeguard people's health?
Well, first of all, nobody's asked, very few people are aware of these changes, which are really significant, which means very few people are asking the question. How many millions of Americans have just given their arms and gotten the jab without any question, without any informed consent? Who's asking the question?
This is very scary. Oh,
this is sinister.
It's very, very scary, because now one can say, I mean, with good reason, we really don't know what it is. It's neither fish nor fowl. It's changing. It's metamorphosing over time. Who knows what it might be next month? How would it be explained next month and the month after that? And what are they using to identify that they're right on top of this definition, this changing definition? Are they making any references to previous definitions in order to illustrate the changing definition of things?
The answer to that, Yatrice, is I had to go through different iterations. How many people would even think to do that? So this information is buried. It's buried. And even the original definition that I referenced may not even be on the archive anymore. It may be removed so that no one can reference it as the original definition of a vaccine. But, you know, this is, as I shared before, this is a worldwide phenomenon in terms of the world community being vaccinated, receiving that injection. So if you listen to world leaders, so for example, Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, you know, was heard to say that vaccine passports are all about rewarding freedoms to people who have done the right thing. And for him, the right thing is giving your arm, getting the jab. And to those who still resist, just, you know, they just won't get to enjoy any freedoms at all. You know, Ed keeps talking about the Great Reset, and this is about the great worldwide reset, a reset in an economic structure where people literally lose their freedoms. And I don't think people realize that. Ed is right about the Great Reset. He is.
Wow. Jeez. That is shocking and troubling in the extreme, because now things are coming together that people had previously, you know, dismissed. Countries and their experts had dismissed. You're being bothered about something that doesn't even matter. What do you know? You're not an expert.
No.
And now we see that the experts really have been playing games with our brains, or whatever is left of our brains after this worldwide jabbing.
No, this is about an economic worldwide reset and getting people to just fall in line.
Wow. Well, that means that I'm in line in that sense of I'm not. I have not been vaccinated. I'm not thinking of being vaccinated. To my mind, I already have a compromised immune system. I don't need to play games with further compromising my immune system.
This is really troubling. If this wasn't sinister, they would not need to keep changing this definition if this was not sinister. If this was based in science, as they want to keep telling us, they wouldn't need to keep changing the definitions. This definition has been changed 3 times in the last decade and twice in the last year.
Thanks, Patricia, for ringing the alarm. Thank you.
Have a good weekend.
You too. Vincent from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Oh, how are you?
Hello?
Hello? Yes, hello.
Yes. Hello.
Yes, how are you, Trace?
I'm hanging in. How about you?
I'm doing the same.
That's the best revenge.
I just want to say that we let them get away with killing Kennedy. We got Vietnam. We got Vietnam. We let them get away with Vietnam. Then they killed Martin. We let them get away with killing Martin, and they killed Bobby. We let them get away with killing Bobby, and we got the first Gulf War. We let them get away with that. Then we got the World Trade Center. And now the stench is so bad, we all have to wear masks.
Who are the they that you're talking about?
The deep state.
Well, that's a kind of catch-all, because when everybody just refers to the deep state, we still have no idea of what it is you're talking about.
Well, there had to be some type of rogue government involvement in all of this, because this is so sophisticated that some punk with a man liquor Carcano could pull this off from a book depository window 11 flights up. It doesn't make any sense to me. And it doesn't make any sense to me 12 Arab hijackers who couldn't even fly a Cessna could maneuver a jumbo jet into 2 buildings.
Yes, but if you pardon my making this comment, you still, I mean, I listen to what you're saying, but you have no proof. And
all this,
you're
all
not
this
able to bring us definitively to the center of what it is you're talking about.
Well, we know, I have proof that states that all of the aircraft in the United States were retrofitted with autopilots that would enable us to be able to maneuver them without human intervention in the cockpit. They're all able to be remote con- remote-controlled planes. So if we were to remote control, if we were able to have remote control over these planes, wouldn't we then be able to divert them away from the towers?
Well, I don't know. What I'm reacting to is that what you're presenting is riddled with conjecture. We have to accept your conjecture as fact. I'm uncomfortable with that.
I see. I accept that.
Okay. So I don't mean to destroy or attack your views. I'm just saying that that's the position I feel I'm in. Listening to you, I'm not getting close to facts. I'm getting, you know, some conjecture, and you're building a case, but it's all iffy. It hasn't yet presented a cogent fact that I could say, oh, I see that point.
I understand that, Yatrice, and I respect that, but I still feel that there's a lot that's been covered up. FBI has information, CIA has information, from Kennedy to Bobby to Martin to the World Trade Center, and they're not releasing it. Everything is redacted.
Yes, but what did you expect?
Masks.
Did you really expect that any secret arm, any secret agency would publish or be very democratic about sharing its information, which is highly classified?
Well, I guess if it was a matter of national security to keep the Vietnam War going, I guess not.
Okay. So where does that leave you with your theory?
My theory leaves me that we're all being played like fiddles.
Okay.
I think we're being kept in the dark.
What would make you change your mind on that point?
Give us all the information that you have. Let us know what actually happened.
It's not going to happen. So what's the next best thing?
The next best thing to do is not get upset about it, pray about it, and hopefully God will sort the whole thing out. That's if you believe in God. There are a lot of atheists out there, but I happen to be a firm believer in what comes around goes around.
All right, well, thank you for at least putting something in our brain to think about today. Thank you so much for that.
And God bless. All right. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too. Vincent from New Jersey. Or was that Vincent? I have my notes mixed up here. I've been writing all over my notebook. Gene from Maryland. You're on the air.
Thank you. Hi, Yatrice, and good afternoon to you and the family.
Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
So I really wanted to call in on your question earlier in the week about R. Kelly, but not about R. Kelly directly. You had a question about R. Kelly, and you asked whether or not R. Kelly received a fair trial. And my thoughts immediately went to Alton Maddox, who teaches us that if you're black in America, you can't get a fair trial because of our status in the Constitution as chattel, and Dred Scott told us so. And I think that that's very interesting. In the AP earlier this week, I noticed an article about former Speaker of the House, Dennis Hastert. Former Speaker Hastert has just settled a sexual assault charge that was levied against him some years ago, and it's dragged on a very long time and has just been settled. And I find it interesting that he was allowed to settle, that this became a civil matter, and there were no criminal charges against him. I find it interesting that law enforcement did not get involved in his case the way they got involved with R. Kelly's case. Can R. Kelly get a fair trial? I find it interesting that law enforcement basically let Jeffrey Epstein, who was supposed to be on house arrest, walk all over the place, fly around on his private jet, go to his private island. Now, I am really interested not so much in R. Kelly or in his question of whether or not he got a fair trial. I am more interested in these inconsistent nature that the way that law enforcement deals with these similar cases. And I put that question out there, and perhaps somebody else will pick it up, because it is shocking how the Justice Department, the FBI, and local authorities don't seem to have a consistent method of dealing with these issues that involve sexual assaults against children. Now, we should also bring back the Catholic Church and take a look at all of that stuff that happened in Boston, in New York, in Baltimore. All of that was sexual abuse against children. Could R. Kelly get a fair trial? So,
well,
I'm
that wasn't my question, actually. My question was not whether he could get a fair trial. My question dealt with how long it took to bring him to trial, despite copious numbers of complaints against him by Black people in behalf of their children. That was my question. Why did it take so long? This wasn't news. R. Kelly had been accused for years, for decades, of sexually assaulting little Black kids.
Children.
Grown ones, too.
Yes.
Why did it take so long?
I think we're asking and targeting the same question here. I am not concerned about whether or not R. Kelly was treated fairly.
I don't think so. No, to be treated fairly means what to you?
I don't think I'm concerned as to whether or not he was treated fairly. Frankly, I don't care. I am concerned that law enforcement, law investigators, the Justice Department, is not consistent in the way that they're handling these cases. That's what I'm concerned about.
But that goes across the board, not just R. Kelly. And it also negates the heavy influence that some people have in altering the outcome of legal measures allegedly to be taken against them.
Yes.
The influence that they have, the chips that they call in. R. Kelly is no exception in that sense.
Well, what I find scary about this whole thing is these things continue to happen over and over and over. And
yes,
law enforcement is not at all bothered by the fact that they appear to be setting precedents in the way they're handling these cases, whether they choose to bring charges or not, whether they choose to reduce the charges, as in Jeffrey Epstein, or not. the levels of inconsistency that are there seem to me that it should make it very difficult to prosecute the next case. And they don't care.
Well, I think you're making a general observation here, and it may not necessarily be on target. Because each case is different in many ways, and there are different parts of the case that should be investigated. I agree with you wholeheartedly that there's something wrong with the quality of justice delivered in cases against people with influence, people with money, people with fame, people with high profiles. And this has been an issue for a very long time, not just with movie stars and singers and people of note, but it is also a smack in the face on this claim that justice is blind. It isn't blind at all. And I don't see the point in defending or even causing a question about, was R. Kelly's trial fair? We also have to look at the complete absence or disinterest on the part of the community. We can't let them off the hook, who do not follow these cases, including the professional community. There should have been no end of legal briefs and legal commentaries by black lawyers on this case, but there's silence. They're not talking. They see no need to appear to be critical of R. Kelly. They're not taking any stance that could be confused with acting in the public interest. And that is very disconcerting. Because history of the law as it applies to blacks is that's for a long time where redemption came, both for those accused and those looking for justice. But they shut up. They don't want to be in the middle of a fight, as they see it, with a very popular person. They see their goodies on the line. People would stop coming to them if they took a public position on this. They will be accused of working for the man and all this other kind of nonsense. But the fact is, if you're interested in justice, this is what you do. Nothing but silence.
I don't think I'm disagreeing with you. And I would just request that you not reduce my commentary to a commentary about R. Kelly. What I'm attempting to do here is to offer a criticism of law enforcement and the processes at which they use on what appear to be, particularly when you look at the charges, racketeering, child abuse, child sex trafficking, which were very similar between R. Kelly and Jeffrey Epstein, for example. That's the point I'm making. My criticism of law is of law enforcement, not R. Kelly.
Well, you could say that, but you will also have to admit you can't say that without parsing these two cases in order to illustrate your point. Your argument will fall apart. You have to use these specific cases to make your point or to validate your point.
I think it would be very easy to replace R. Kelly with the bishop from Boston or the bishop from Baltimore who were abusing children as members and clergy in the Catholic Church. I don't think the name is relevant.
It's very relevant. You name me any ordinary, non-name recognizable person who belongs in your discussion.
None, zero, because they're easy to prosecute.
Okay, so that's the point. You have to put R. Kelly in because he's keeping company in terms of your argument with Epstein. What R. Kelly did to black women and black boys, black children, Epstein did to white women and white children. They belong together. They're making the same point.
So
racially,
the point
they're just
really
flip sides of the
that the politician.
And the point you're making, what is it that you're making that is very different from points that have been made before?
It's simple. It's simple. Is that the majority of the news coverage and the majority of the public discussion around these issues targets the perpetrator. It does not target law enforcement and the justice system.
Because people see them as two different issues.
Well, they are two different issues. They should be seen separately.
Well, then that's what the public is doing. They separated the individuals charged with the crimes from themselves or from the agencies. You can't fight all of that at the same time. You have to understand how these kinds of things are, how they are treated is a result itself of a complicated process. To attack, let's say, or to be seen as attacking the criminal justice system or the law enforcement community or the church as an institution, you're taking on a huge fight. You don't have nearly the resources to start.
No. I have a talk show that I can call in once a week at 1 o'clock. That's what I've got.
I thank you for that. But at the same time, that goes only so far in terms of changing people's minds, in terms of getting exposure for this particular kind of crime, and getting started a discussion, a broader discussion, about what is the responsibility of a community. These are all community issues when you look at it.
So when does it stop, Utrecht? Where you have the Franklin scandal.
When people take it seriously enough, when people take it seriously enough to say, I will not allow another child from my community, however you define community, to be sexually exploited this way, I will not allow it. It takes work.
I hear you.
That's the answer. The simple answer is it takes a lot of work, and people are not inclined to devote that much of their lives to what they consider as issues. They're not concerned about that.
I hear you. I'm just not clear on how to reach the Speaker of the House when he's involved in this kind of stuff. Or the people who were involved in the Franklin scandal, running in and out of the White House.
You're not concerned about them. You see, that's the point. You're focusing on them.
They were all abusing children, is the point that I'm making.
Right, but that's not who will solve this problem. They are the agents of the problem. In the end, community response is what you're looking for. You build community awareness. You build a community movement. All this is work, and it costs money, and it takes time. How are you going to make sense going to the people allegedly committing these crimes and confronting them? What do you achieve? They just laugh at you. Why? Because they know they're protected. And you're not.
It still doesn't make it right.
It doesn't make it right at all. But at some point, you have to come to a decision as to what is the most effective use of your talent and your time. What do you put yourself into to yield a predictable result, given the expense, how long it would take, the battles that you have to wage against powerful forces? All these things are part of the decision. It's not as simple as, well, they're doing wrong, we know they're doing wrong, let's attack them. It's not going to, they have the support of multiple systems that, in a situation like this, interlock to protect their interests and what they see as their reputation.
Okay. I will listen to the next caller. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you for your call today. Very thought-provoking, that's for sure. Camille from D.C., you're on the air.
Hi, Latrice.
Hello.
Hi, this is my first time calling. I'm so excited to speak to you.
Oh, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Yes, I stumbled across your show about a year ago, and you really have gotten me through this last year with all the chaos, and just appreciate you and, yeah, become more critical of just, you know, everything in life, the news, and I just appreciate you and the jazz and everything.
I'm just getting old.
Amazing.
That's a good sign. What's happening?
Okay.
Because I'm getting old.
Okay, I just wanted to make 2 points this week. Well, first of all, I'm a licensed clinician in D.C. I work in healthcare. And, yeah, for those who don't know, D.C. used to be called Chocolate City, and it is still a predominantly, you know, Black city. And I was just so disappointed with the mayor's new rule that, you know, if we don't get vaccinated, we have to give up our license to work if you work in healthcare in D.C. And I saw one of my last patients yesterday, and it was just so sad. I'm just so disappointed that this is what's happening. I don't want to get the vaccination. But, you know, it's really troubling because, like I said, the reason why I brought up the demographics of the city is that, you know, there's a lot of health disparities going on, and I just feel like no one's talking about that. Even prior to COVID, there were, you know, existing health disparities, staffing issues, and, you know, long-term care hospitals, home health, and it's just so disappointing to see that, you know, no one's really trying to, I don't know, I guess address it. That's not the word.
But could you understand why?
It's hard to understand why they would not want people to receive care. It's hard to understand.
Well, you're actually pointing it out without knowing it.
Right.
You're reacting from your vantage point of what is good for the people, what will safeguard their health, what is good public policy practice. That's your vantage point on this whole thing. It is not shared by them. They couldn't care less about that. For the mayor, the vantage point is what, do you think?
It's hard to answer that question without making people
feel evil. No, it isn't hard at all. It is so easy.
I guess, like you said, they don't want people to receive care, or they just want more pressure put on healthcare workers or the existing healthcare systems.
They're not even thinking on that deeper level. They're thinking purely about self-preservation. They're in politics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
how do I position myself with respect to this pandemic?
Mm-hmm.
How do I position myself favorably for re-election? They couldn't care less about all the other stuff that they should be thinking about. You are thinking as a public health person. You're concerned about the public health. You're concerned about sustaining people and what happens to them in a situation where you have a disease running amok throughout the community. They're not concerned about that. They want to be seen as strong leaders, as people who make decisions, and they get things done. You're just concerned about making sure, how many people did you see today? How many more have to be seen tomorrow? Are we really helping people? Am I part of a system that understands the problem at ground level? They're not concerned about that. There is a disconnect through almost all communities when you have a big problem. And the natural tendency, I say natural in quotes, okay? The natural tendency is to see things specifically from your own self-interest point of view. Nothing else matters. I don't care if 10,000 people die tomorrow, but can I claim that we prevented 50,000 people from dying? That's what I'm selling.
Understood.
It's become very cynical and cold. And self-preservation is the number one reason that they have for getting involved in any public issue. Self-preservation. You belong to the old school. You really care about whether people get well. You want people not to get this disease. They couldn't care less. So you have a clashing of interests. They have, perhaps, comparatively speaking, more power to make things happen their way than you have to make things happen your way. And that will be the eternal battle. You have to understand, this is part of systems theory. You belong to a different kind of system. They belong to a different kind of system. And their job is to be faithful and true to their system. They will be rewarded. Your system doesn't necessarily work that way.
Mm-hmm.
See? So inevitably, you will have to make up your mind as to whether you can remain in the system, sustain the amount of damage that it will do to you, because you have values, you have a vested interest, and you want to help. That is not their system. Their system doesn't teach that.
Right. Wow. Oof. You're right. I agree.
This is, when I talk about systems theory, I always tell people to study it. You individually may be 10 times more human and humane than the system you end up in. But that is going to be at the core of your struggles. You always will have to fight between holding on to your values and what you're taught and what you know intuitively to be the best course, and the system doesn't give it that. They got facts, they got figures, they have forms to fill out that they could show and whatnot. That's what they're interested in. You're talking from a whole different place that incorporates spirituality, genuine caring, the delivery of services, helping people. You're completely separate and apart from a system that is about producing the results they know that would be approved and will be rewarded. We got to go. I so enjoyed your call, but you know what I enjoyed most was what came through clearly was your humanity. And you're troubled because that is under attack right now, your humanity and your concern for your community.
Mm-hmm.
But don't give up. Don't give up. But don't ignore what the problem is. You have a clash with a system that can't afford or won't show humanity. It doesn't operate on that basis. You do. Two different callings. But I wish you great luck and stamina. And I wish you more and more insight into how you wrestle with the system that you're in. And how best can you get done those things that you can see are vital to the interests of the community. Thank you so much, Emil. I really appreciate your call.
Thank you.
That brings us to the end of our program today. I thank you all for calling. Again, the point of these dialogues is to stimulate thinking. New thinking, perhaps, but thinking. Most doctors don't even think they're in a system. They think they're doctors. Okay, that's good. But when you have enough information that you're dealing with a system, you've got to try to understand the system that you're in. And that goes across the board for all kinds of professions. It goes across the board. It is the weekend. I really, really wish you a restful one and a joyful one. Bring people into your life and let people into your life who add dimension to your life and who bring you all kinds of wonderful things that fill you out as a human being. Watch out for the others, because you know there will be others. But don't be afraid to open yourself up to people who bring good dimension to your life. Take some time off, rest a little bit, and look at the world around you. It's wonderful in many, many ways. And so are you. You're wonderful in many ways. We don't think about that. But try your first thought about that this weekend. And we'll see each other again next Free Your Mind Friday, or perhaps earlier in the week. Bye-bye.